Our first speaker today is speaking on investigating alternative ways of estimating the prevalence of serious mental illness using the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, Philip Cott, Ph.D. Philip?
What's the page down here?
Should be.
Okay, here's my presented disclosure. I was supposed to, I think, say none, but I just said I've been employed by RTI International, and then I threw in the blurb we're supposed to say when anybody asks what RTI International is. An independent nonprofit institute providing research, development, and technical services to government and commercial clients worldwide. This is second line. Let me acknowledge that the project, although not necessarily is this paper, was funded by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, Center for Behavioral Health Statistics and Quality. That's CBISC of SAMHSA. But the views expressed here are my own and don't reflect that of the Department of Health and Human Services. And that this particular paper was sponsored by my employer, the RTI International's Statistics and Epidemiology Division. So I'm out of time now, right? Okay. So here's the outline of my work. First, I'm going to give you some background. Then I'm going to talk about defining what we mean by serious mental illness. Then I'll talk about several different ways to estimate serious mental illness. Then I'll talk a little bit about estimating standard errors. Then I'll give you some results, and then I'll talk about future directions and remaining open questions. Okay, sure. The National Survey of Drug Use and on Drug Use and Health, hereafter called NISDA, is an annual household survey of the U.S. population 12 and over, and it's run by SAMHSA. And it contains approximately 67,500 people every year, and it's had that size since 1999. And it's used to produce national and state-level estimates of mostly substance abuse, but also of mental illness. And the correlation between substance abuse and mental illness, although I won't be talking about that at all. Now, they want to estimate the fraction of the population or parts of the population with serious mental illness, but this is a very long survey. We're asking all these drug questions, so we don't have the time for a full diagnostic assessment of serious mental illness for the all 67,000 people. So instead, in fact, we don't worry about the full 67, we worry about the 18 plus, so the survey is for 12 and over, but the mental health portion is for 18 and over, and that's only about 46,000 people. And as I said, we don't have the time to give them a full diagnostic assessment, so instead we draw a small stratified Bernoulli subsample of those people based on their respondents. Based on respondents of questions we do ask them, we sort of oversample the people we suspect may be seriously mentally ill, and we draw a stratified Bernoulli sample. And in 2008, it was roughly 750 relevant for us. In 2009, it was 500, and same for 2010. In 11 and 12, we're going to ratchet it up to 1,500 each to try to get better estimates or fit a better model. In fact, we'll talk about the models we're trying to fit shortly. Now, what did we define as serious mental illness? Well, it's actually defined in the DSM-IV, which is Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorder, 4th edition. So if you meet those definitions and you have a certain functional impairment, and the functional impairment is defined as it's got to be a level of functional impairment that interferes with one or more lifetime activities. So a person in the mental health surveillance survey is diagnosed. So what we do is, again, we have the subsample. We give them it's a telephone interview, but which is run by a clinical psychologist, and he determines that somebody is seriously mentally ill if he's diagnosed as being, by the answers to his questions, seriously mentally ill by the DSM-IV criterion, and if he has a global assessment functioning score of less than 50. So if the clinical dietitian, based on his questions and this criteria, determines him to be seriously mentally ill, we say he's seriously mentally ill. And that's what we call the gold standard. So we have the gold standard for this subsample, which is like 500 people in 2010. Now, but remember, we have this 46,000 people who we don't, most of whom don't get the full diagnostics. They're asked several questions, and we want to, based on the answers to those questions, determine whether which ones of those are likely to be mentally ill. So we're basically going to try to fit a logistic model using like the 500 people, so we can use the results from that model to apply to the rest of the 46,000. And currently what we use is basically two scales, which is based on answers to questions on the NISDA survey. The K6 scale, which is a six-item scale, all items go from 0 to 4 on psychological distress questions, 0 being none, 4 being the most, and so it goes to 24. We also have a function entailment scale, which comes from WHODAS, which is the World Health Organization's disability assessment. That has 8 items. They all go from 0 to 3, and it goes from a 0 to 24 scale. So we basically have these two scores based on questions we ask on the NISDA. So this is not the clinical assessment. These are just questions that we use to model mental illness. Now we're also looking into other things we could look at. We could look at whether they had past year or lifetime depression, whether they had past year or lifetime major depressive episode, and that's also defined by a DSM-IV criteria. So it's actually a series of questions they have to answer, and from the answers to those questions, we determine whether it looks like they have major depressive episode, whether they had anxiety in the past year. A really good predictor is whether they had suicidal thoughts in the past year, and a great predictor is whether they received treatment for mental illness. I mean, people who have received treatment for mental illness often are mentally ill. We decided we can't use that. Why? Because the purpose of SAMHSA is to get people to go get treated for mental illness. So if SAMHSA was doing a good job and we defined mental illness by receiving treatment and more people receive treatment, it would look like more people are seriously mentally ill. When all that's happening is SAMHSA is doing its job and getting people to get treatment. We don't like to use that. I spelled demographics wrong. We also don't like to use demographics, because if we use demographics over several years, like the to define serious mental illness, then every year we wouldn't be able to see if there's actually a change in like the fraction of blacks who are seriously mentally ill, or if it's just our definition that says there's no change because we define blacks as less likely to be seriously mentally ill. Okay, so we don't use those things. Now let's talk about what estimators we could use. Now the simplest estimator we could use is just simply use the Mental Health Surveillance Survey. Just use the Mental Health Surveillance Survey and just take, you know, your simple ratio estimator. We have a weight, you know, 1 over the probability of response, adjusted for non-response. We give the person a 1 if he responds, if he's diagnosed as mentally ill, 0 otherwise, and just estimate the fraction. And we can do that for the entire population. We can do that for blacks. We can do that for Hispanics. We can do that for people who receive treatment. We can do that for any demographic groups. So that's the simplest thing we could do, but we don't like to do that because the sample size is too small. So instead what we do is, based on the answers to those questions, everybody in the NISDA is given a value. Is giving a value either based on his answers, we either determine he's assigned being mentally ill and he's assigned not being mentally ill. And I'll talk about how we make those assignments in a second. But that leads to what's called the cut point estimator. And why it's called the cut point estimator will be clear in a second. So it's basically the same sort of function, but it's to everybody in NISDA, and it's based on their assignments. So it's the full NISDA weights plus everybody's, and that's the cut point estimator, and that's what we currently use. And how do we make the assignments? Well, the first thing we do is fit a logistic regression. We fit a logistic regression with three covariates, an intercept, a K6 score, and a WHODAS score. And so we fit this regression. This is sort of a probability of being mentally ill, which we get a probability of mentally ill, a score, which we can then assign to everybody in the NISDA. But we don't use the probabilities directly. What we do is we sort these things from the most likely to be mentally ill to the least likely to be mentally ill. And then we establish a cut point so that if we assigned everybody above the cut point as being mentally ill and everybody below the cut point as not being mentally ill, we'd have the same amount of false positives and false negatives. The same amount of people would be assigned mentally ill who aren't mentally ill as being assigned not mentally ill who are not mentally ill. So that's why it's called a cut point. We get this probability scale, we establish a cut point, and the reason why we establish The SAMHSA likes a cut point. It likes to assign everybody a status. Now I came along and being a statistician, I said, why don't we just use those probabilities directly? Why don't we just assign everybody a probability of being mentally ill and just take the weighted average of the probability? And they said, well, you know, somebody's either mentally ill or not mentally ill. And I said, well, you know, this is a weighted sample. So, you know, if the weight is 1,000, we can say 300 of those people are mentally ill and 700 of those people aren't mentally ill if P is 0.3. So let's investigate using that estimator. Now, the trouble with all these with any estimator based on a model is that models could fail. So we came up with this notion of bias-adjusted estimators. And so what the bias-adjusted estimator does is it takes the sort of the probability estimator and adjusts for the bias. So for any domain, it just makes an adjustment of the difference between the true and the predicted within the mental health survey. You can do that. You can bias adjust the probability estimator. You can bias adjust the cut point estimator. So these are two estimators, although they originally start with fitting a model, you can basically show that asymptotically they're model free, that they have good probability sampling principles. How am I doing? Oh, I still got 7 minutes. Now the way logistic regression works for the entire sample for everybody, the bias-adjusted estimator is the same as the probability estimator, because it's calculated in such a way that the bias goes away for the full population. But if we're fitting it over 2 or 3 years and you're looking at blocks in a particular year, it could be biased. They could be different for a particular domain, like blacks in 2010, but for everybody across 3 years, it would be not biased. Now the cut point estimator is slightly biased, and the reason is you can't balance the number of false positives, or usually can't balance the number of false positives and false negatives exactly. There's usually some group in the middle that if you sign it one way, it's too many false positives, and you sign it another way, there are too many false negatives. So the cut point estimator for the full sample is almost unbiased, but not quite unbiased. Okay, so now we have 5 estimators: direct estimator, cut point estimator, probability estimator, bias adjusted cut point estimator, and bias adjusted probability estimator. How do we go about estimating their standard errors? Well, all of them basically have sort of this generic form. They all have they're all a weighted average of a Z with a NISDA weight. The direct estimator, we just take the true value and sort of correct it with the MHS, with the mental health surveillance weight. For the probability estimator, for the three nearly unbiased estimators. So for the direct estimator, we have that. For the bias-adjusted probability estimator, we can stick the probability and then the bias correction. And for the bias-adjusted cut point estimator, we can stick the assigned value and the correction. And we can treat them all as weighted estimators. And since they're all weighted estimators, we can just sort of plug them all into a program like Sudan and estimate their standard errors. So estimating their standard errors is easy, relatively easy, if you plug in these funny things, for the direct estimator and the two bias-adjusted estimators. We can also assess the bias of the bias-adjusted estimators by just looking at this bias term here. You plug the bias term into Sudan, and they said, this bias term is supposed to be asymptotically zero. So if significantly different than zero, we can assess whether, let's say for blacks, whether the probability estimator is biased, or the cut point estimator is biased. Now, the bias-adjusted estimator isn't biased, but the unadjusted estimator is missing this term. So if this term is significantly different than zero, we see we really need this bias adjustment. If it's not significantly different than zero, then we'd be okay using the direct cut point estimator, which is what we use, or the probability estimator, which is what I want them to use, or wanted them to use. And you can tell by the tense that there's something going to happen. Now, we've also developed a linearized standard error for the probability estimator, assuming the model is correct. You can't linearize the cut point estimator because it's sort of like a quantile, because it sort of goes from 0 to 1 at a discrete point, it can't be linearized. So we've actually experimented with some version of phase balanced repeated replication. Unfortunately, our simulations have shown that this great idea we had hasn't quite worked. We're trying to fix it, but I'll talk a little bit about that later. Anyway, so what are the numbers we get? Well, for everybody, this is based on 2 years of data and a model that uses K6 and HUDAS. Direct estimated would have 5% mentally ill. Our cut point estimator basically has about 3.8. If we bi-adjust the cut point estimator, it's slightly higher. The probability has to remember for the entire population, bias adjusted and not adjusted is the same. It's 4.33. Now the standard error is slightly lower for the probability estimated than the direct estimator. For the cut point estimator, it's actually worse. What we do is actually worse than the direct estimator. And why is that? Well, only 4% of the population is mentally ill. So if you just assumed everybody was not mentally ill, you'd only be wrong 4% of the time. But there's about 3% have false positives and 3% false negatives when you use a cut point estimator. So you're wrong 6% of the time using the cut point estimator. So you're better off guessing all zeros. Now, what variance do we actually use? Well, we basically assume we're fitting the model perfectly, and we estimate 0.11, even though the truth is 0.89. And neither estimator is biased, which you'd expect, because it's the full sample. So probability estimator better, right? Well, what happens when we look at Hispanics? Well, we do Hispanics, the direct estimator is quite small, 1.3. The probability estimator is much higher, it's about 4. Has a slightly smaller standard error. I can't get the pointer to go where it's supposed to go. Has a slightly smaller standard error. That's nice. But its bias is twice the standard error of the bias. So the probability estimator is biased. The cut point estimator isn't biased. Isn't very good, but it isn't biased. So if it isn't very good, why do we consider it? Well, one of the things we want to do is make comparisons across years. Well, for comparisons across years, we don't exactly know what the standard error is, but we know it's going to be a lot smaller than just the absolute value. So to calculate the absolute value, the cut point estimator has a lot of bias. But for comparisons, it's not. You can sort of almost make the definition that for our purposes, we're defining seriously mentally ill as the cut point being seriously mentally ill. Okay, the cut point estimator was never biased, anything we looked at. The probability estimator was biased also for non-Hispanic blacks and for receiving treatment. But cut point estimator was never biased. Now, what do we plan to do? We plan to fit the model using multiple years of data, and especially the next 2 years when we have lots of data, and then either use a cut point estimator or maybe a hybrid of the cut point and the probability estimator. We're also interested in moderate mental illness and mild mental illness, to estimate those. We're going to investigate adding those additional covariates, and we have some ideas to try to make our standard error formula work. It hasn't worked now, and we think the problem is those people that if you push them one way, it goes too many false positives, and push them one too many ways, there's not a false negatives. We think when you replicate, that number bounces around, but that number should be going away asymptotically, and it's not. Because what happens is our BRR variance estimator is too large. It gives us more variance than there actually is. So in a sense, it's not so bad. It's nice and conservative, but it's too conservative. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.